Vaccines continue to roll out with a new one in the mix. CDC guidance calls for states to vaccinate people with underlying health conditions in the same stage as essential workers and people who are 65 and older. But in Wisconsin, people with pre-existing conditions have to wait as those other groups got bumped up on the priority list. Some have criticized that decision, saying people who are more likely to have severe complications or die if they contract COVID should be prioritized. WPR Rural Communities reporter Rob Menser talked to Wisconsinites with pre-existing health conditions about their experiences during the pandemic and how they feel about having to wait longer than some others for a vaccine. Talked to Rob about his reporting earlier this week. Well, let's talk about the people who aren't in this vaccine priority category yet, people who are under 65 but have these chronic health conditions. What did you hear from people you went out and talked to?
Well, so the first thing to know is that this is a group that in some cases are really at high risk if they were to get COVID-19. So I talked to people, as it happened, the sources that I spoke to were all in their 50s or 60s, who had, you know, a woman that I spoke to who had pulmonary fibrosis that had taken away some of her lung capacity, others who had, you know, a lung abnormality or had were cancer survivors that are comorbidities that we know have a real effect on making the effects of COVID-19 more severe. And so it's, as you can imagine, it's that much more sort of frustrating to them and upsetting to them that they are not yet on the list of eligible groups for the vaccine.
And I know this priority list gets complicated sometimes, but if I'm reading you right, Rob, the CDC said people over 65 and the people we're talking about here, people under 65 with these high-risk conditions, usually the CDC says, hey, they should be entering the pool, the eligible for vaccines pool together, right? But that hasn't happened here in Wisconsin.
That's right. That's exactly it. And it does get complicated because from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services point of view, what Wisconsin did was move 65 and older, that group, move them forward in the priority list. Their point of view is that they did not deprioritize those with chronic conditions. But of course, like the in practice for somebody who is waiting for the vaccine, what it means is there's this very large demographic group that is eligible now while they're not eligible now. And so it feels unfair to them.
Can you talk about what the state has said about why they made that trade-off and might be prioritizing not just those over 65, but younger people maybe who are in higher contact workplaces?
Right. So this is the essential workers issue. And this is why teachers are currently eligible, bus drivers, grocery store workers. And it's because these people have public-facing jobs and the state made a judgment that that those who work out in the public and they have no choice but to work out in the public and we need them, you know, to be doing that, that they run a risk of being exposed to the virus. And they also run a risk of then spreading the virus more. And so there's like, that's a coherent argument. That's a good reason why you would want to see those people vaccinated. It's just that because we remain in a world where supply is constrained, we also have a situation where, you know, to prioritize one group means that there is another who does not receive that priority. And this is, you know, this creates this sort of conflict.
And if we did expand eligibility sooner to people with pre-existing conditions, pre-existing conditions can mean a lot of different things. How big a pool would that add to the vaccine priority list?
Yeah, this is a massive complication without a doubt. So, you know, when you're talking about somebody who has a lung disease like pulmonary fibrosis and is 61 years old, that's like to me at least, that seems like a pretty clear-cut case. Mm-hmm. That is somebody who the risk is quite definite. But chronic conditions means a whole lot of things. I noted in my reporting, you know, one chronic condition that makes your outcomes worse for COVID-19 is obesity. But that's like 1.5 million people in Wisconsin. And it's very, you know, at some point, you can't prioritize everyone, at least not yet with the supply constraints. And so, yes, it does become very, very complicated very quickly to when you start to say like, well, which chronic conditions and which ages should go first, even within this group.
as we wrap up, Rob, bringing things home to that person who's, say, 60 to 64 with that pulmonary condition, is there a sense of when they might be eligible?
Well, so we know that they're in Group 1C, and so they are next up, the next group that would be that the state would open eligibility to, and we know that supply of vaccines is ramping up fairly quickly. The state's receiving more and more vaccines. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine has come online and will begin to be distributed. And so, you know, I think we all know at some point this whole process, it's going to flip from there being a rush on the available supplies to a point where public health folks are going to be out trying to persuade hesitant people to get vaccines. So that will happen. You know, I've seen 6 weeks, I've seen 2 months as estimates of when we get to that point. But it's coming. But just right now, where we are now, we remain in this sort of supply constrained place, and it causes some of these conflicts.
Rob, thanks a lot for joining us.
All right. Thank you.
That was WPR Rural Communities reporter Rob Mentzer joining us for a look at vaccine priorities in the state. Coming up, a doctor joins the show for more on that topic and what the Johnson & Johnson vaccine approval means for vaccination rollout. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a chronic condition that makes COVID a more dangerous diagnosis for you? Are you eagerly awaiting a vaccine? What do you want to know about the news about Johnson & Johnson, the vaccine approval, a deal to manufacture more of it with another company? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll get more on vaccines coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now about vaccinations. The White House announced today that the pharmaceutical company Merck will help Johnson & Johnson produce its vaccine, which the FDA granted emergency approval for last week. Dr. Jonathan Tempty is here to explain how the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will fit into the rollout across the country and the process of determining who gets vaccinated when. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you been vaccinated, one or both shots? Are you in the line now, eligible now? What questions do you have about the vaccine rollout and this new one now in the mix from Johnson & Johnson? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Dr. Jonathan Tempty is Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Tempty, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Rob. It's always a pleasure to join you.
Before we get into this newly approved vaccine from Johnson & Johnson, we were just talking to Rob Mentzer about Wisconsin's vaccine priorities. Some concern that there's this category, Dr. Tempty, of people with a chronic health condition that could make them especially vulnerable to COVID. They're not at that 65 age level yet. What do you think about that particular group and how they fit into eligibility for vaccines?
Well, I caught the tail end of Rob's discussion there, and absolutely, we really want to get vaccine into everybody who wants vaccine, and especially those who have high-risk medical conditions. We have, however, been constrained by supply issues, which now are finally opening up. In fact, you know, we're now up to about 1.8 million doses per day in the United States. And that's really, really good news. But despite that, people are still feeling left out. And we really feel that. I think the challenge, again, though, is the supply coming in and all the promises already made to individuals out there.
Right, because in the categories we already have eligible, there isn't the supply to get to all of them right now. That's still true, right?
Well, that's exactly the case. And right now, I think I've seen that there's a priority toward teachers, child care K through 12, and perhaps some post-secondary educators as well. And that's another large component out there of individuals. And it really, you know, goes into what parts of society do we want to prioritize to get back going. However, the good news is we're seeing case counts at a level that we haven't seen since last summer. So we've gotten over this big hump. And the other good news is we're on a downslope instead of an upslope, and that's where we want to be. So the likelihood of infection has really, really dropped on down.
And now here comes this Johnson & Johnson vaccine, one shot instead of two. It doesn't need that cold storage like the first one on the market did. Can you talk about what this means for the overall effort?
Well, first and foremost, this is a wonderful vaccine that has been basically 100% effective in terms of preventing hospitalization and death. Those are the things we want to avoid with COVID-19. And so it's doing a very good job with that. But as you mentioned, it is a great equalizer because this can go to pharmacies, to any clinics out there, because it just needs a refrigerator. And being the case, we can get it all across Wisconsin rapidly. The other good news is the partnership between Johnson & Johnson and Merck, allowing for a much greater manufacturing capacity. So we're going to see now three different vaccines flowing with increased abundance in the weeks to come.
Now, we're consumers here in the United States, Dr. Tempty, and we see three different products on the market. Should we be comparison shopping, trying to decide which one's going to be best for us?
Well, I can't even tell you which one is going to be best. So, and I've spent the last 20 years working with vaccines. They fit different niches. They do different things. But the bottom line is they're all incredibly effective in preventing the things that we worry about most, and that's the hospitalization and death. And one can quibble about, you know, how things were defined in terms of outcomes, but basically, the experts out there, our advisory committee on immunization practices at CDC and the FDA, all are treating these three products as basically identical or at least co-equals, and all filling a necessary role in trying to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as possible.
Before we bring on our callers, Dr. Tempty, you mentioned numbers looking good, at least compared to this, you know, the horrific January, moving in the right direction, vaccines going up, more good news. There is concern that people are going to race to go back to normal too fast before the numbers are good enough. I don't know. Do we take our foot off the gas just yet?
We do not take our foot off the gas at all. We have to be really, really careful out there. And for a couple of reasons. One, even with the strains we have right now, we are keeping them at bay because of distancing and masking. And there is just incredible evidence out there that these have worked tremendously. If we start backing away now, it opens the door for things to start accelerating again. And even though we've had a lot of cases in Wisconsin, our best guess is only about 24-25% of us have actually been infected and are immune. And then as of today, about 16% of us have gotten at least one dose of vaccine. But that still leaves an awful lot of people out there who could potentially get infected. And then we have to consider the other variant viruses out there that appear to be more contagious, and some might be able to somewhat escape the protection from prior infection or vaccine. So we have to be very, very cautious at this period of time. Otherwise, I think we're going to get back into the straits we were in 2 to 3 months ago.
We're talking about the latest vaccine news with Dr. Jonathan Tempty from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, by the way, also on an advisory committee, a work group for the CDC on COVID-19 vaccines. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us in Eau Claire. Tim, hi.
Hi. I go through a very large medical doctor's office in our region. And I am part of the group that is eligible as of March 1st. I am a frontline communication worker in people's homes. And I am just pulling my hair out because the company that I go through doesn't have any way of marking me down as a frontline communication worker. And thus, they say they'll call me when I'm available for the vaccine. But I was available March 1st. They're still giving me that runaround. Any advice?
So I just want to clarify, Tim, it isn't just they're saying they don't have enough vaccine. They're not acknowledging that you're in that eligible group right now. Do I have that right?
They don't have any way of marking it in their system that I'm a part of that eligible group.
Interesting.
So they don't acknowledge it.
Thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Tepti, so apart from supply, which is still an issue, even if they agree that he is eligible, do we have that system in place for vaccine providers to know, hey, this person X is in group Y, therefore they can get this vaccine?
Well, that is the great challenge out there. When we make recommendations based on age, that's really easy. When we had recommendations for healthcare personnel, it was relatively easy because most of the vaccinators were able to formulate lists and so on. School districts are able to do this fairly easily because they have their teachers registered and so on. But once we get into some of these other classifications, it gets much more difficult. On our state advisory committee, when we're discussing this, we were saying that there needs to be a lot of faith out there and a lot of grace out there in terms of getting the vaccine to people who are eligible. There's not going to be any way that we can absolutely verify that somebody works at a grocery store or is, as Tim, a communications worker or anybody else in a high-risk field of employment. And so I think we have to get the word out that as the supply loosens up greatly, we just have to be very, very open to accepting people at their word.
Tim, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Hope you can get that squared away soon. We'll go to Jan now in Madison. Jan, hi.
Hi. My comment or question is pretty similar to the last one in that I'm a veterinarian that, you know, nationwide, the veterinarians have been told that they should be in 1B because we work on pets which can carry COVID and we're in very close contact with them as opposed to even, you know, other people that are don't get as close contact to people. But anyway, and they're in Wisconsin, my understanding is that only large animal veterinarians are allowed to go in 1B and small animal have to wait till 1C.
Interesting. Jan, thanks for that call. Dr. Tepti, do you know where veterinarians are fitting in right now?
Yeah, this has been an area of a lot of discussion, and unfortunately, we have not been called back to do any meeting over the last month or so in terms of trying to formulate our best response. When we do put together a prioritization scheme, we will always make mistakes. We will always leave people out. We will always include people that maybe shouldn't be there. But it is a difficult process that really needs to be constantly improved. And as Jan points out, that large animal veterinarians kind of get pulled into the food production and agricultural sector, which definitely is in 1B. And veterinarians dealing with small animals were not there. However, again, I think we're going to see a rapid movement toward that 1C and opening the door. But I can tell you that most of the comments that I and other people of the state Disaster Medical Advisory Committee have gotten have been along this type of line. People who have medical conditions or people who are at high risk for one reason or another that were just didn't get included. And again, this is the difficulty with trying to draw, you know, straight lines in areas that really are difficult to do so.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to Craig with us in Mercer. Craig, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just curious. I've been vaccinated. I have a friend who is an essential worker and is eligible for the vaccine, I think, coming up this week, but is hesitant to take it because she's had COVID and had a really bad run with it and is worried that the vaccine will cause symptoms equivalent to when she had COVID, and so is thinking about not getting it. I'm just wondering if your guest could talk about that.
Yes, that's an excellent question, and we do know from ongoing studies that people who have had COVID before can have a more robust reaction to the vaccine, and it's all a matter of timing. We tend to recommend people not be vaccinated if they've had COVID within the last 2 weeks,
And in fact, if you've had it in the last 90 days or 3 months, you're probably, number one, already protected, and number two, might have more of a response than you would if you waited until after 3 months. That being said, we have a lot of experience now with the mRNA vaccines, the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine. And we do find that people who've been previously infected have much more strong response to that those vaccines. We don't know as much about the Johnson & Johnson. And that being a one-dose vaccine, I might recommend, if time allots, for individuals like that to at least consider that vaccine. Again, I'm prefacing my comments on the fact that we're in a good spot here in terms of COVID-19 relative to where we were in the middle of November. And if people have made it now through an entire year without being infected, they're doing something right. And so keep doing those behaviors. Be careful out there. But again, think about the vaccines. The other thing I'll just mention really quickly is we do know people that have already been infected, when they do get a vaccine dose of any variety, they mount a really, really good immune response. And the question I think that is out there in terms of a research question is whether or not having a repeat vaccination after that, after you've gotten one, is even going to be necessary. But for right now, we have to adhere to the recommendations and the guidance.
Thanks for that call. And Dr. Tempty, thanks for joining us again.
And thank you so much for having me on this beautiful March afternoon.
Dr. Jonathan Tempty is Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us for a look at the latest news about vaccines.